TFM.
Welcome back, everyone, to Saddle Up, our dedicated Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I gotta say, I am so glad to see that your ears are not pointy today, and I have human Matthew here with me, thank goodness.
Well, Chris, that would be illogical, and obviously you've missed the fact that I don't need to have pointed ears to follow the teachings of Surak.
All you need is a shot of silly serum.
Actually, I had a mind meld with Uhura.
Oh, but talk about, we'll get into it in the show, but talk about Beto. We talked about how he was like a different character in the documentary episode compared with earlier in the season. And the actor had to flip a switch again here and become another character indeed.
Yes, yes. This one was slightly more, I guess, humorous and made more sense actually for the episode. So yeah, absolutely. It did.
All right. Well, that's right, everyone. We're going to be talking about episode 8 of season 3 of Strange New Worlds. It is 4.5 Vulcans, and here is a quick rundown of the story. What's the best way to pass as a Vulcan? Become one. That's what Pike, Uhura, La'an, and Chapel do in order to save a pre-warp civilization without violating the Prime Directive. Doesn't make sense? Don't worry. It's all just a setup for a story that aims to shed light on what goes on in the Vulcan mind. After their one-minute mission is done, the foursome is unable to transform back into humans, but finds that they like being Vulcan more. This is a very troubling development for the crew, as they watch Nurse Chapel shun all relationships in favor of work, Pike fall in love with 42-minute rotating shifts for more efficient operations, Uhura brainwash her boyfriend, and La'an try to take over the ship and start an interstellar war. The only hope for returning things to normal? A Vulcan called Doug. All right, Matthew, well, I've been thinking this one over ever since I watched it and how we were going to discuss it, because as you've seen online, I'm sure, the reactions are they're very mixed. People either hate it or they love it, or I'm not sure if they love it, but they enjoyed it or they hate it. It's a very divisive episode, and I'm really curious to hear your first thoughts on what you thought about it.
I think that this is an episode that I will say my first viewing, probably a fourth of the episode, the first fourth of the episode, I was kind of hating. And I was like, oh man, not another episode that I can't stand. And yet, there's a moment where things really shifted in the episode. And I think it's when so much of the episode became more character driven. You know, there were places where we were able to lean into learning about Spock. We actually learned a lot about Una in this episode, a lot more than we've really learned about her since, you know, her big episode in season 2, right? And we got a chance to learn a little bit more about Ortegas, you know, both of them. We got a little bit of a chance to learn a little bit more about La'an, right? And what drives her and actually some of her fears, right? We got to learn more about Batel. And as kind of there is a bit of this episode that is very silly, but there's also a lot of this episode that really was just allowing us to explore the characters that we've created for Strange New Worlds, which I came to really appreciate. And I also actually came to really appreciate a lot of what I think the episode had to say about the idea of, you know, what does it mean to be Vulcan, right? You know, what is that like to actually be Vulcan? What is it? What does it mean to be human, right? And how difficult is that? What does it mean to be somebody who is of mixed race? What can that be like, especially, you know, if your dominant race is not a big fan of that? Right. I think there's just a lot of really interesting discussions that happen in this episode. And it is kind of wrapped, I think, in quite a sillier package. And yet at the same time, I think one of the things that I've been asking for in this season is for us to just work on character development. Let's dig into these characters. And this episode is really, when you boil it all down, is actually about the characters, right? Yeah. And I appreciated that. And I liked it for that. And so most people, I think, are probably going to be really shocked because I'm going to be really positive for the most part on this. There's a few things here and there that I don't really love. There's a few choices that I don't love that they make. But at the same time, being able to explore the characters on a show that I actually do like the characters, and when we're given the opportunity to explore them, I'm always excited. I was just really glad of. So yeah, I mean, for me, it's mostly positive, which again was kind of a shock because when the episode began, I did not think that was going to be the case. So what about you, Chris? What are your kind of like, I guess, general overall thoughts, you know, just kind of before we really get into some of the nitty gritty.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm going to overall be positive because I've been thinking about this episode ever since I watched it. And there's all kind of things I can pull out of it and talk about social commentary and things like that. One of the problems that I have in doing that with this episode is that I think that the stuff that you do find there and a lot of the stuff that you latched onto, I think is unintentional. I don't think the writers were trying to do these things with this story. I think that their biggest concern was to make a comedy and just to make a silly episode. And they, you know, latched on to a lot of Vulcan stereotypes that we've had in Star Trek for decades and played off of those, but they didn't actually dig in and explore the issues that each person could represent. But that aside, my experience in watching the episode was that at first it was okay. They're setting up a story and there's this emergency. They've got to go to this planet. And then they clearly had the idea that they wanted to turn the crew members into Vulcans. And so they came up with this whole convoluted situation to allow them to give this serum to the crew members to turn them into Vulcans. Because, I mean, all the steps leading up to that are, they don't make sense in terms of an actual story or writing. It's like, oh, well, yeah, we made first contact with them, even though they're pre-warp, but they can see Vulcans, but they can't see anybody else. But they have this fantastic scanning equipment, so you have to actually be a Vulcan. So they set all this stuff up, but it's okay. Like, I'm going along with it and it's fine. And then when they do the serum, this is where they started to lose me a little bit. They do the serum and then everyone transforms almost instantly into literal Vulcans. And they started crawling around the floor, and I had flashbacks to Enterprise's extinction. And to, you know, it's cases like that where I just want the director to realize that that doesn't work. Like, that kind of overacting, it almost never works.
Yes.
So don't do it.
And let me agree with you real quick. There's quite a bit of this episode where I 100% agree that the director needed to pull back the actors because the overacting that's happening here is kind of insane. And I will say, you know, of the four that get turned into Vulcans, probably the one that least overacts is actually Jess Bush, because she just kind of comes off as kind of cold and logical, but everybody else is, and at least with La'an, it makes sense because what it's doing is bringing out that augment veracity and, you know, intensity. But with Pike, I mean, again, you know, obviously we've seen Spock in the original series and shouty Spock. We all kind of make fun of that. But yes, he had, I think, the hardest time not overacting. So I 100% agree with you there. That was one of those places where I definitely felt like, yes, I know you're going for kind of comedy here, but I think that it being a little bit subtler for all of them would have been very helpful.
Yeah, yeah. So Anson Mount, first of all, I think he's a fantastic actor, and I love his Pike. In this episode, though, and we've seen him do other things, too, like playing the Gene Roddenberry character in the Holodeck episode. Like, he's usually really good at kind of shifting gears and playing different types of characters. But in this one, I couldn't tell if he was doing a parody of Vulcans, of what fans maybe think Vulcans are like, or if he thought they were filming a Coneheads skit from Saturday Night Live. It just...
That or if he has voice modulation.
Right? He was just odd for me throughout the whole episode.
I agree.
Okay, but to get back on track, so the crawling around on the floor thing, I thought, I wouldn't have done that. But then they pull up, and somehow not only has the serum transformed Pike into a full Vulcan, it's also like lifted his hair way up. I mean, so
that
much
was
more
ridiculous.
Hair.
I'm sorry, but can we talk about that? That was probably the dumbest choice that this episode made, because it made legit no sense. And in fact, can you explain to me why all of their hair changed just because they became Vulcan? It made zero sense. Absolutely should have. No, that was a terrible, terrible, terrible choice.
Right. And so that got me. And then the whole scene with them walking down the corridor with the Lerpa and their, you know, it's just, you could tell that creatively they had this vision that they wanted to do this with the characters, regardless of if the story worked or not. It's just like, wouldn't it be cool if we put them in Vulcan makeup and we had them walk down the, you know, strut down the corridor and so forth. And so all of this said, it sounds like I'm complaining. I'm not actually complaining. It's that this was my first experience watching it. And this was what was leading me into the story, and things like the outfits, the hair, all this stuff, transforming them into Vulcans was just basically a wink of, hey, we know this is ridiculously silly, and we know that this is not what would really happen, but we're going to do this episode. So everybody get ready. Here we go.
Well,
so from that point,
can we add one more thing to that, Chris?
Yeah.
The dumb, stupid music choice of them walking down the hall. And why does he have a Lerpa?
Yeah, right.
Like, that whole...
And he takes it on the mission.
On the mission! Why does he have it? It makes zero sense. I mean, that whole... It's like, they should just... Are they going to walk down the hall to sabotage? You know?
Well, they couldn't get the rights to that, so they picked
they probably
this
couldn't
other
but
songs.
Yes, that was another place where I just did not understand...
Yeah.
What you're trying to do here, it was like you have taken things to an absurdist level, and again, you needed to reel it back.
But they didn't want to. See, that's the thing about this episode, is that the show, they want to play with different formats, and they want to do all of these disconnected and kind of out of the box ideas. Although I wouldn't say that this is really out of the box, because how many times have we seen crew members transformed in Star Trek? And, you know, there are a lot of episodes that have similarities to what happens to them in this episode. But anyway, they want to do these kinds of episodes, so they don't want to roll it back. And as the episode goes on, they just keep throwing more and more and more silly stuff at us, culminating with the fact that Una can't control herself around this short Vulcan named Doug, And so that made it difficult to... Now, I did laugh off and on through the episode. Yeah, yeah. So it's not like I hated the episode or I'm sitting there going, God, I can't believe they did this. There are certainly moments where I laughed. There are moments I thought were interesting and all. But when I started thinking about, okay, well, you know, there is potential here for some really interesting commentary and some really interesting exploration of the characters and different issues about, you know, what makes a person a person, biology or culture, things like that. They're so concerned in the episode of just throwing the next joke at you that for me, everything feels completely superficial. And so the things that we do pull out of it, and like some of the stuff that you mentioned as being a reason why you like the episode, I don't think that it was actually the intention of the writers to put any of the stuff that you're pulling out or that I'm pulling out also in some of my notes into the story. I think that it's just stuff that we can see that it's there. And in another world, another version of this episode, it could be a real gem of deep social commentary and character exploration.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, one of the most interesting parts about this whole episode is, you know, we turn them into Vulcans, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of mentioned this idea of they become stereotypical in that sense of all the worst attributes we think of as Vulcans, which, you know, in some ways makes sense. Like, if you were to just turn somebody into a Vulcan or a Klingon or whatever, the idea of what it means to be a Vulcan or what it means to be a Klingon or a Romulan or a Cardassian or a Bajoran, all of those things, it's like, it is not just the biological sense of being, but it's also the cultural sense of being. Mm-hmm. Those two get melded together to help us understand that. And I think this episode actually does a really great job of explaining, you know, the difficulty that it is to be Vulcan. You know, Spock talks about that, the idea of the raw emotions that Vulcans have, which are much more extensive than humans. And so therefore, for humans to be able to then be turned into that, but have none of the training of what it actually means to work to control those, and then to have those social interactions how does that all work? I mean, and what I think it goes to do is that it's something that we've talked about many times throughout all the years that we've been podcasting together through, you know, doing Enterprise and, you know, talking about things on TNG and all this stuff. Like, logic itself can be used to logic yourself into doing anything. I can logic anything into making it make sense, right? And so it really comes down to that whole idea that living logically then is much more difficult because logic needs to be tempered with other things. Mm-hmm. And so these new Vulcans that we get in these four Vulcans have nothing to temper that with because they've just been dumped into being Vulcan without what it means to be raised to learn how to temper logic with, as Spock says, wisdom, right? In Star Trek VI. Yeah. And so I think that's really, really interesting. And, you know, all work and no play make Vulcans very dull. You know, it's that whole Shining thing, like all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And these Vulcans are very dull because they have no idea how Vulcans interact relationally, logically, right? Because you, again, logically, relationships would have no purpose for you because if work is all that matters. So really, that is a fascinating discussion. And this episode does kind of touch on some of those things, which I think is great. And I think it's almost where this is one of the issues that I think both of us have had in season three with Strange New Worlds, right? Is that they don't always touch on the most important aspects of what they're writing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it kind of gets left by the wayside. Mm-hmm. And even if it's referenced or kind of hinted at or whatnot,
yeah,
it doesn't become the main focus, which, you know, traditionally, that would be the main focus, right? In a Star Trek episode, that's what makes Star Trek Star Trek, right.
Compared with anything else that's not Star Trek, right? That's a distinguishing characteristic of Star Trek.
Right. We're exploring, you know, Star Trek was always about exploring the human condition. And you do that through digging into kind of like, what does it really mean to be human? And we also did that with our other races. What is it? And this was a great episode to really try and dig into. What does it mean to be Vulcan? And we get some of that stuff, but it is more left kind of on the surface, where I would have loved for us to dig even deeper into that, because I think it would have been really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just question whether the writers on the show really have an interest in exploring these things. They just throw them in, not just this episode, but, you know, they'll present something on a surface level, but they don't really dig in and go deep into things very often. They did earlier in the first season or two, especially the first season, but I don't see it as much here. So that's why I feel like some of the things that we're seeing here are just incidental. Like, they're there a little bit because they create a very wobbly framework to try to make this story stand up long enough to get to the closing credits. Mm-hmm. But they're not actually core to the story. The whole episode itself is just, let's do a silly episode with the Vulcans. That I really think that was the conceptual.
Yeah.
Approach to how this came about. And I don't know that we really actually learn much about what it means to be Vulcan, because, like you mentioned, culture is extremely important in how you would interact with other people. And you can see that, you know, I mean, I have a perspective that a lot of our listeners don't have, because I live in a culture that's not the culture that I grew up in, but I've also lived here for more than half my life, almost all my adult life. And so I don't come across in the same way as a native person here would in Japan, because even though I'm surrounded by it all the time, and have been for almost 30 years, I wasn't raised in that culture. And so there are things that are very natural to someone who was that aren't for someone from the outside. And then, you know, my children are biracial and my children are adults now. So I've watched them grow up here and I see how they act as adults. And, you know, they blend in perfectly because they grew up here. And so even though they were raised by me, so one half of the parenting was American, the overall culture influenced them far, far, far more. So there's no biology going on in terms of that. It's very cultural. And the reason I bring this up is that in this story, the idea is that the serum transforms them into Vulcans, and suddenly they're Vulcan. They're adult Vulcans. And of course, that would never actually work that way, but they wouldn't instantly know how to handle being Vulcan.
Right.
And
which
there's some explanation in this about how, like, this has to do with the serum was based on Spock's experiences and so forth. But I think that's also just a way for them to try to give some kind of explanation about how this would work, which also doesn't make any sense. And if it did make sense, Spock has been living all these years having to balance being half human and half Vulcan. Mm-hmm. So you would think that these four crewmates becoming Vulcan, if they're actually getting that, they would have some ability to understand what's happening to them and find a way to balance it, instead of becoming like cardboard cutout stereotypes of Vulcans.
Well, I do think that that's one of the things that the episode does do, which is the deterioration of each of these characters, right? and their understanding of what it means to be Vulcan. Mm-hmm. You know, you see it all in all of them. And I think that there is an aspect of them being able to kind of pass as Vulcan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's only superficially Vulcan, really, in a lot of ways. And it also, mm-hmm. What we see is it also kind of brings out their worst tendencies of the core of their being. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we see that specifically in La'an. I think she's the best example of that.
Hers made the most sense.
Yeah. I also think we do see that with the character of Uhura, right, who has felt like she's always struggled to communicate, even though she is a communications officer, and mm-hmm. therefore this has given her the ability to communicate as efficiently as she's ever had in her life, right? And she finds mm-hmm. that to be very beneficial to her as a yeah. character. Yeah. So I think that's mm-hmm. interesting. And I think, you know, in the end, the Pike character becomes just more of, for the most part, the joke of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But the most interesting aspect of this to me, in reference to that, is that the whole idea that the soul or the Katra mm-hmm. is going to show them their true selves. So when they go into the Katra space, right, they are shown who they truly are. So the core of their being, even though they have been turned into Vulcans, the core of their being can't actually change. Their core of their being mm-hmm. is human. And yeah. I found that to be really, really interesting because, one, whether you intend it or not, what you just said is that everybody in Star Trek has a soul. That's a fascinating thing to say. Mm-hmm. And two, that the core of our being is tied to our soul. And that mm-hmm. can never be changed, no matter what we mm-hmm. do, even if we were to alter ourselves through some sort of, like, you know, serum like this. We can't actually mm-hmm. change the core of our being. And so that was also very interesting. And it allowed us, I think, at best to explore specifically, and this is where the episode would is at its best, was explore La'an, right? Where it, mm-hmm. it brings forth the aggression of the augment DNA that she carries in her.
Mm-hmm.
And because it also, I think, shows exactly why her and Spock actually are a good match, because they mm-hmm. truly are similar in ways that maybe we didn't put together beforehand, but they are mm-hmm. both products of two competing ideologies, two competing DNA strands in their body that are battling in some ways for dominance, for the struggle to be on top, you know, or how do mm-hmm. you meld those two together? Mm-hmm. And so I thought all that was really interesting. And so there is, again, whether it's intentional or not, there really are these fascinating mm-hmm. ideas that are happening in this episode. And mm-hmm. and so for me, those are where the places really came down to. Mm-hmm. Once the episode kind of, I felt like, left the uber silliness of the first, like, maybe 10 minutes and started to dig in a little bit more, it just mm-hmm. got to be more interesting. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I think really what this showed is, like, the insufficiency of logic in all of life. You need more than just logic.
Right.
Logic yeah, is well, not enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these characters who are dumped into this, that's all they have to go on. And, mm-hmm. You know, we also get the understanding, and I think this was the beauty, right? When Chapel says to Spock, I think I understand what you've been going through so much more, and I appreciate yeah. who you are as a Vulcan so yeah. much more, but the difficulty that it is to be Vulcan, mm-hmm. especially on a ship full of human beings. And so, mm-hmm. It's weird because there's just so much that's really interesting and I think really fascinating and really character driven in this episode, mm-hmm. wrapped up in an incredibly silly package.
Yeah. I didn't realize they ever got over the uber silliness myself. So you said they left that behind and but at least they came back around to it. But okay, there's a bunch of thoughts I have on this. The maybe working backwards, the thing about Spock, like if there's any takeaway about the Vulcan perspective on this episode for me, it's that the final message or the final point is that diversity in yourself is a strength and it's important, because what we see is that Spock, because he's half human and half Vulcan, he can draw on elements of both, which makes him a stronger, it makes him a more well-rounded person compared with the four right. Vulcans that we see in Pike, Uhura, Chapel, and La'an. And so I've seen some interpretations of this episode being that it's like a put down to be biracial, bispecies, but I think it's the opposite. I think that it shows the strength
yes,
that I you agree. Can gain from that.
Yep.
I don't necessarily think that was an intention of the writers either, but I think right. that's the message I would take away from it, is that they're able to solve this whole situation because of Spock, and he wouldn't have been able to solve it if he didn't have these two parts of who he is, and he hadn't gone through the struggles that he went through growing up, and he had not learned to balance the two sides. Now, the Spock in Strange New Worlds, I think, is doing a better job of figuring all this out and balancing it than the Spock of the original series onwards, where we finally get to Star Trek VI, as you mentioned, and we're able to see him actually clearly tell another full Vulcan
right.
that value, right? So that's what I would take away from the Spock part. The Katra part, your interpretation of it is really interesting, because I hadn't thought about that. And my reading of it was different. I'm not sure. And this is where it would be nice, like if they have these ideas, it would be nice if they would actually explore them in more depth, instead of it just being something that makes the story work for them. Because I think the Katra part is in there simply because, hey, we're going to do an episode about Vulcans. And, oh, we learn in Star Trek 3 that Vulcans have this Katra. And then that's been used through Star Trek after that. So let's throw the Katra in, and that'll be our way to get everybody out of this. I don't think that there was any thought of beings, not just Vulcans, but beings have a soul. Like everyone in Star Trek has a soul. And I feel like the way I read it was that Spock being able to communicate with each person's Katra to show them who their true selves are was him being able to communicate with the Vulcan Katra and use logic to show the Vulcan part of them that, hey, there's actually this human here that somehow he would be talking to, let's just take Pike, he would be talking to Pike, but the Katra was introduced to Pike because he was transformed into a Vulcan. And so then Spock would talk to the Katra and using logic explain that, hey, you're actually human and this thing happened to you and now you've lost who you were and there's value in who you were. So do you want to go back to that? Do you want to stay as a Vulcan? And then because of logic, Pike would come to the conclusion that he should return to who he was.
Yeah.
And once he becomes human again, the Katra is gone, because the Katra was part of what was introduced as being Vulcan.
Human again. Just keep thinking of that cut song from the Beauty and the Beast. But see,
so that's how I read it. But your interpretation, I think, is a very interesting one and would mm-hmm. make a really fascinating, yeah. no pun intended, episode of Star Trek.
See, I think it's interesting just what you were saying, because I felt like the way that the episode was portraying is that, because Ortega says something about this idea of like, what if we could just strip away, you know, the Vulcan avatar, mm-hmm. something along those lines, mm-hmm. so that they could see themselves again. And so when we mm-hmm. talk about the idea of them going into this Katra space, it allows them to truly see who they are. So yeah. The core of their being, again, is something that cannot be changed. And mm-hmm. and it's at the soul of their being, right? And mm-hmm. so it's like, that's, again, I find that to be utterly fascinating as a thing mm-hmm. to explore in mm-hmm. this episode. And I think it makes sense, too, why that in the end, La'an was the one who struggled the most, because she has the most struggle in general. Mm-hmm. She is the one
that
who
makes sense.
Is yeah. at war with herself mm-hmm. inside, the same way Spock is. And so when we come down to her being led out of that through the fight dance that they do, which allows her to be able to realize, and this is the beauty of this, is that the character work that we did then with the episode where she's finding it strange to be in this relationship with Spock because it's really snuck up on her. She did not expect mm-hmm. to feel this way about Spock. She did not yeah. expect to be this deep in a relationship with anybody. Mm-hmm. And yet what she finds herself in being in this place where there's a man who has socks in a drawer mm-hmm. in her place. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't quite know if she's ready for that. But the moment that was so beautiful was that what leads her out of this struggle that she's been in is realizing mm-hmm. that there's somebody who understands it. Mm-hmm. There's somebody who cares about me. And it's somebody I'm already in a relationship with. Mm-hmm. And I think in the end, it's the love that Spock has for her and the love she has for him that allows her to be able to let go and to realize I'm in a place that I did not expect, but I mm-hmm. I want what I had. I don't want this other thing. And mm-hmm. there was something incredibly beautiful about that. I thought it was really well done, and it's probably the best part of the episode to me. Mm-hmm. I loved getting to explore her character and her relationship with Spock. I think they're doing an exceptional job of exploring that in a very a much more adult way for the most part. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm glad we got that. So
yeah. Well, one of the best parts of La'an's Katra space is that we got to see Cetacean Ops in live action for the first time ever.
That was hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
But overall, yeah, what you're describing is what they really should have done. The where it falls down and where they had this opportunity to really explore what you're describing, not about La'an, which we do see a little bit of, but everyone else, is that it's basically like, hey, we can talk to them, we can talk to their Katras, and everybody's okay now, except La'an. It shouldn't happen off camera. See, if we actually got to go into the Katra space of each character and explore how they're feeling and see how they're brought back over, then all that stuff works wonderfully, and we get so much insight into the different characters. But instead, it's just all magically fine again. It's the same way at the beginning of the episode that they have to go through all of this stuff to transform into actual Vulcans so that no one on the planet will be startled. And then they fix the problem in 1 minute. Mm-hmm. And no one even saw them, I'm sure.
Right.
Like, they just go down and, oh, we're done, we're back. Right. And it's the same here. It's like, okay, we've got to find a way to break through to them so we can get them back and let them see who they really are.
Right.
And then it's all done. They're okay now.
No, right? I agree with that part. I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting because this episode it was definitely a longer episode than last week. And yet at the same time, the episode, as you mentioned, it felt like there's so much more to explore here, and that exploration is specifically as to what they're throwing at us idea-wise. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do think that when we've had the criticisms, right, of the show, I think they've been very constructive in this way, right? Is that what we've continuously said is so much of the time a lot of these ideas are good.
Mm-hmm.
But we want the most important ideas to be the ones that get fleshed out. And a mm-hmm. lot of times when we've said that there's a gimmick in the episode,
mm-hmm.
that's the thing that gets focused on instead of the important ideas. Again, like take an episode of, Deep Space Nine as an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the greatest episodes of that show are ones that have a very core idea that we're going mm-hmm. to discuss, right? So say In the Pale Moonlight. And we're going to really dig into how far would you go?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to discuss that at great length, and that's going to be the sole focus of that episode, right? So to have an episode where we're going to kind of dig into this idea in this iteration of Star Trek, what are Vulcans like and all that stuff, you think about the way Enterprise discussed Vulcans, and we actually mm-hmm. really got to dig into them and figure out what made them tick, why they were the way they were. There were mm-hmm. slightly humorous explorations of that in places, but there mm-hmm. were also some incredibly serious discussions of that in episodes. And this episode, I think, gives us a fantastic place to do that by actually turning some of our characters into Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
And yet what kind of mostly gets focused on are the more humorous elements of the story, whereas the most important elements of the story aren't either humorous or not humorous. They're just ideas that kind of get put out there.
Mm-hmm.
But then never really truly get unpacked.
Right.
It's like you put the present out there for Christmas, but you never actually unwrapped it.
Yeah.
It's like it looks shiny. If the present's there, the paper looks mm-hmm. great. You know, wouldn't it be fun to dig into that box? But we never actually open the box.
Yeah. Well, to take that one step further, you pull the ribbon and the ribbon and the bow come off, but you don't actually take the wrapping paper off or open the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, humor can come out of the situations of actually exploring this stuff. You know,
yes.
Deep Space Nine is full of humor, but it's not the center piece of the episode, except in one rare failed attempt in Profit and Lace. But, you know, you can get humor naturally out of stories. It doesn't have to be, you know, slapstick, let's make a joke all the time. And so one other thing I wanted to mention still while we're on all four characters is that the other way that I kind of interpreted what was going on was that we have this view of what Vulcans are, and as fans, as viewers, and they basically took each of these elements and put them onto different characters. So you've mm-hmm. got Nurse Chapel, who's like so focused on her work, has got to get everything done. You've got Pike, who is in command and wants to be efficient. You've got Uhura, who's in kind of more in that meditative side of what we see in Vulcans at times. And then, of course, you've got La'an. And the thing about La'an, which they do touch on slightly, but I think they really miss the opportunity to explore, is that the augment DNA may have something to do with why she's acting the way she is. But I think what's happening even more so is that she represents the Vulcans from the time where aggression and their paranoia had taken over to the point that they left the planet and the Romulans began to be an offshoot of the Vulcans.
Yep.
And that's why, you know, she and Pike have that one moment where they mention Romulan, but then they don't go anywhere else with that.
Yep.
And it's really never talked about at any other point either. And I think that was probably a bigger factor. And that's another part of the Vulcans where they've split it up and they've tossed it over to four people.
Yep.
And then with Uhura, you mentioned her being able to communicate more clearly than ever. But actually, I don't think she improved her ability to communicate at all, because what she did instead is she made it easier on herself because she just brainwashed the person to just do totally whatever different. She wants. So yeah. there's no communication. I mean, communication is learning to talk mm-hmm. to somebody and to see differences and learn to give and take and understand each other and adapt and adjust. Right. And that's the opposite of what she does here. She basically just turns Beto into who she wants him to be.
Yeah, she cheats.
Yeah. And so I don't think she learned anything about communication at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just such an interesting thing because, again, I think there's a lot that I just kind of really enjoy about the episode. And again, for all its faults, I think in a lot of places where it's at its best, it's truly digging into characters. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, The storyline, for Una and her and Doug,
Doug the Vulcan,
was actually really fun for me because mm-hmm. I think there was a part of that where I think we've all experienced, if you've lived long enough, you've experienced probably having a relationship with somebody who probably wasn't great for you in the end, mm-hmm. but there was something about them that you just couldn't help yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so in the end, you just had to kind of stay away from them because it really wasn't beneficial for mm-hmm. you. And, you know, for the most part, the character is not one we've really done a ton of exploration on. Other than the one big episode that we got in season two, where we explore her being an Illyrian. And mm-hmm. so to have this about her and her personal life, which also we've never really gotten into, was right. fun. They also, the other part of that was the idea of there being a Vulcan who is intrigued and obsessed kind of with humanity.
Mm-hmm. Not just a Vulcan, his family.
Yes, his whole family is one his that appreciates were. Humanity yeah. And has yeah. studied humanity and finds mm-hmm. them fascinating. I thought was kind of a really great idea. I thought yeah. it was a really fun idea. And him and Spock kind of going back and forth, you know, this is the only episode that's ever had a teaser. A stinger at the end.
A stinger, yeah.
Was also kind of enjoyable in that sense. And so, you know, I liked all of that stuff. I it was incredibly silly in some ways, but it was that's where I felt like that was kind of a fun type of silly for me personally. Mm-hmm. And so, again. It was about character, and I'm okay mm-hmm. with, you know, it being about character in that sense. So,
yeah. Yeah. The Doug part. Yeah. I mean, he certainly wasn't. Oh, well, here's the thing. Actually, when I was watching it the first time, when she first mentioned a Vulcan who was like a Kotr expert, I thought, oh, maybe we are going to see Cybok in this yeah. episode after all, because remember, I thought, maybe in an episode about Vulcans, they might mm-hmm. pick up that thread that's been dangling for so long now. But then I quickly realized, no, it's not going to be that. But it was an interesting choice. But the other thing we haven't talked about at all, because it is sort of in a way separate, although it's tied into La'an, is Jim Kirk showing up. in the episode. And so I kind of like the interaction with Scotty a little mm-hmm. bit.
Yeah.
But clearly we can see where they're going with this series. They're like, they've pushed the gas pedal down now on bringing the TOS yeah. crew together on this show, because otherwise we don't need Jim Kirk in this episode. Except it gives him a chance to team up with Scotty, say, call me Jim, have a scotch together.
So one of my notes literally wrote down is, not sure why Kirk is in this episode, but he and Scotty become friends. And yeah, I mean, that is basically why he's in the episode.
That's why he's in the episode, yeah.
And
because so, they have fewer episodes to work with now than they expected, yeah, because yeah, the fifth season is going to be shorter. So they really have to accelerate this bringing
right
those crew members together.
Well,
and
I mean,
explaining,
by the time,
yeah,
writing this, though, they didn't know that. I mean, this yeah, this episode's already been in the can for a long time.
Anyway.
So.
Well, actually, no, I don't know, but maybe Jim Kirk wasn't in this episode when they wrote it. Maybe that was a late addition.
Could be.
We don't know exactly, you know, what was going on behind the scenes. You know, they
yeah,
may have,
I mean,
they may have been tipped off that there were going to be fewer opportunities.
Yeah, this is.
I'm sure we'll find out down the road. Like all this stuff will come out in interviews and all over time, and we'll find out a bit more about what happened. But
yeah, yeah, that was definitely a part of the episode. Don't know why it was a part of the episode, but you know, yeah. I mean, it's really, this is one of those things where I really enjoyed. I guess maybe we're just kind of at the point because we kind of talked about, I feel like, all the stuff in the episode, and I don't know, yeah, maybe we're at final thoughts type of place.
Well, we talked about 45 minutes longer than I thought we would when the yeah, credits rolled after
there
I watched this the first time.
but I mean, I responded to this episode the way that I did because in the end, it became about the thing that I have kind of been asking for in this show, which I've been asking for. Please, please give us character. You know, take the characters that you've created for Strange New Worlds and make them the focus. And they did that in this episode. And some of it, I think, worked really well. And some of it, I think, worked maybe less well.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the places where it really worked, and I think specifically with the storyline with Spock and La'an, I really appreciate it. But, I mean, we didn't even touch about the idea of with Batel, right? And her, you
oh,
know,
right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
which I really enjoyed that, too, right? Her kind of finally telling off this, you know, Vulcan judge advocate general for Starfleet. I loved her finally kind of losing it and actually mm-hmm, correctly calling out basically his Vulcan racism, you know, mm-hmm, which I thought was fantastic. And I thought really well done. And then of course it ends up, you know, getting her the job. And so that stuff I liked. So, you know, I think for me, I would probably give this 3.5 Vulcans out of 5. You know, it's so hard because everything that we've talked about and all the frustrations even that, you know, you kind of have had with the episode and all. And it's like, gosh, I can't fault you at all. I have all of those same kind of frustrations that you have too. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there was just a lot in this episode that I did kind of appreciate mm-hmm, enough to make me enjoy watching the episode, which was also strange because when I started the episode, I thought I was going to hate it, you know, like, because yeah, honestly, about a fourth of the way through, I was like, oh gosh, oh no. Oh no! For the love of Thor, why? You know what's yeah, happening? Anyway, so yeah, I don't know, Chris. Where are you?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I have. I don't know if frustrations is exactly the right word for me with this one, just because even though I point out all these things that they could have explored more, I'm not really expecting it from the episode after that start and where we were going with it. I wasn't really expecting anything serious or deep to come out of that. And I'm fine that it doesn't, because I think this episode, you just have to take it for what it is. It's a silly outing. They had an idea.
Yeah.
And then they found a story. They somehow, through convoluted, illogical ways, made a story that would allow them to do their idea of dressing everyone up like Vulcans. And you just have to take it for that. That's what it is. And anything else you pull out of it, like the stuff that you've talked about especially, I think is a bonus. And it's great that that's there. And, you know, hopefully people can find that kind of stuff in it and it adds to it for them. So I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's just, this is what Strange New Worlds is going to do. And I think we're all as fans going to have to accept that this is the show. They want to do different things and play around with Star Trek and see how many ways they can tell stories and show that they know a little bit about Star Trek and also that they don't know a lot about Star Trek in the stories that they write. And that's just what it's going to be. And they're going to bring the TOS crew together. And I think season four is probably going to be a lot more of that. I'm expecting for McCoy to show up either in the last episode of this season or early in season four. Because he's the last big missing piece. And I don't know if they'll bring Sulu in. I think it'd be funny if they brought Chekhov in first, since he wasn't actually there in the first season. And maybe they can have an inside joke about La'an being related to Khan, and then she can make a comment about Chekhov being there or something. So,
yeah,
I don't know. This episode is just, I think I enjoyed our discussion of it. It's different than I thought it would be. So I'm going to give this episode 5 extra inches of hair. And you know, it's like
really,
the hair just
really
keeps getting taller.
So. You used to call Captain Pike the human with inappropriate hair. And now just because he's a Vulcan, he's suddenly your best friend? Illogical.
That's it. Yeah, I love that. So that's where my rating also comes from. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on 4.5 Vulcans. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And you'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, choose to send to a show, choose Saddle Up, and that'll come right over to us. And you can also find us on social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not taking cooking classes from Nurse Chapel so you can make the perfect Plomeek soup, where can people find you?
Well, I don't follow her recipe because I'm following my great-great-grandmother T'Pol's recipe much better. But you can find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing 02. Of course, here on the network, outside all the great Star Trek talk with Chris, doing the 602 Club, talking about all of those franchises we love outside of Star Trek. So check that out. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One is called Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, just one chapter at a time, which, Chris, as we're recording this, it's back to Hogwarts Day, so it's the perfect time to revisit that show. Ooh. And you can find me over on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just how you can get your hair, you know, to be at least 5 inches off of your head, where can people find you?
Yeah, I buy my hair product at Home Depot to make that work. So
get really spackling it there.
Yeah, well, you can find me, as you mentioned, doing all those shows with you here on the network. You can also find me in the back catalog on many shows, and you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C, and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can send me a message wherever you are. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything else on the network going, we could definitely use your support. To find out how to help, how to get involved, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without the help of everyone who's supporting us now. So thank you so very much to everyone who is. Well, Matthew, looking forward to next week when we pay a visit to the terrarium.
Well, Chris, let's just hope we don't get locked in one. Hit it.